Veterans and Emergency Services, before we get any farther. I think very quickly so that I won't forget to do it later. We have a possible committee measure introduction today, and first of all, sort of a disclaimer that our vote to introduce this LC draft 2339 as a committee bill does not in any way obligate you to support the bill, but we do need it get it introduced in order that we can effectively act on it. It is a product of the Oregon Law Commission and a work group, and it deals with liability issues for emergency responders, and it's very, very complex, and I have been promised that really smart people will be here to explain it all to us at the time that we actually hear it in this committee. But for today, all we would need is an introduction as a committee bill.
Representative Thompson? We need to open a work group and a work session, rather?
Do we need to open a work session to do it?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I didn't have that step in the process.
Yes,
all right.
We do.
In that case, thank you. I will open a work session on LC 2339. Mm-hmm. Representative Comp.
Madam Chair, I move that LC 2339 be introduced as a committee bill.
Representative Comp moves that LC 2339 be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Those of the opinion that LC draft 2339 should be introduced as a committee bill will say aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk Could the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Comp?
Aye.
Riley?
Aye.
Thompson?
Aye.
Hunter?
Aye.
Freeman?
Excused.
Aye.
Chair Cowan?
Aye. Thank you. LC 2339 will be introduced as a committee bill. We'll close the work session and open a public hearing on HJR 7. Mr. Molina, could you bring us up to date, please?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, HJR 7. Amends Oregon Constitution relating to eligibility to veterans for Oregon War Veterans Fund General Loan. It removes the 30-year home loan provision, and it refers resolution to next regular general election for voter approval or rejection.
Thank you.
And we do have some fiscals here, dash threes, that have been emailed out and submitted, so we should have that before you.
Okay.
I have a few copies.
All righty. Representative Maurer is here with us. Did you want to join us? Do you want to give us a summation? Is Representative Hovey or his representative here? Aha, thank you. Did you folks want to give us a kind of a background, or would you like Paul's help in doing that? How would you like to get us started?
Madam Chair, I will not be able to give you much of a background.
Okay.
Representative Ron Maurer, House District 3, serving most of Josephine County. And this started as a constituent issue, and it was discussed with the governor's office, and it became clear very early that there was a move to work on a series of veterans issues, and they had the Veterans Task Force. And this, out of the Veterans Task Force, came a number of recommendations and ideas. And so my constituent issue was rolled into the concept of House Joint Resolution 7. And so, you know, as a veteran, as a retired Army major, how we treat our veterans, I mean, as you know, on this committee is very important. And a lot of our veterans' laws were created out of World War II. And those worked fine in the World War II era. There were some minor changes in the Vietnam era. But there really has been no impetus to change many of the veterans' benefits, veterans' laws, because we had a declining or a shifting need in the veterans' world because we had no wars. Well, that has changed. That's been shattered. And so we recognize, I mean, most people, most Americans recognize that we can't, that the same administrative policies and the same things that we were doing 40 years ago don't work today. And so it's been an evolution because most of this stuff doesn't change overnight. And ultimately, it does cost money. House Joint Resolution 7 is just one tiny piece of addressing a new reality. And there have been a series of other changes, both at the federal and the state level. And so I am very supportive of the governor's Veterans Task Force and the recommendations and what they've come out with. And the details of the language of this resolution are very important because you're talking about really, I say quite frankly, arcane definitions. So I'm willing to work, or I want to work with the committee. This is not a partisan issue. It's about doing the right thing. But we also realize that there's a fiscal reality at the end of the day that we have to deal with. So I'm very interested to hear the testimony of everybody and see how it works out. But I do, at the end of the day, want to know that we can send something out to the voters in support of veterans. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And you're welcome to join us up here if you wish. Okay.
Chair Cowan, members of the committee, my name is Rhea Armitage, legislative aide for Representative Paul Holvey, and just want to speak really briefly on our support for HJR 7. Let me start off by just thanking Representative Maurer and Representative Matthews for chief sponsoring HJR 7 with us and the collaboration with the Veterans Task Force, Paul Evans, Tom Mann, to allow us to introduce this bill with the help of HJR 3, which I think was all a part of getting HJR 7 to come together to accomplish the goal of removing the arcane definition of that 30-year limitation and then changing the 210-day consecutive days of service down to 178 days. We had a constituent, Robert Bushman, who served honorably in Vietnam and was unable to get a home loan through ODVA because of the 30-year limitation. And we started to look at the issue and figured that there was no reason why he shouldn't qualify for this home loan. And we didn't see any reason why that 30-year limitation should be in there. And we came to find out, thankfully, that the Veterans Task Force and Representative Maurer and Representative Matthews had interest in getting those definitions changed and getting the 30-year limitation removed and getting it down to 178 days. So we were very glad to chief sponsor this legislation. Representative Holvey is very supportive of it. And he would he also would like to... Our National Guardsmen were coming home, and they were getting brought home a day before they were eligible for federal benefits. And so the fact that we got this down to 178 days is extremely important. That 210 days, consecutive days of service, was there was no need to have it up at 210 days. So like Representative Maurer said, this is a nonpartisan issue. Really glad to get this to the floor as fast as possible and get it to the voters in the next election cycle. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I do appreciate the fact that folks who have been looking at a number of issues around this have come together, and this is sort of, with the amendment, as I understand it, is going to be sort of a merger of House Joint Resolution 3 and House Joint Resolution 7 that as they were initially introduced. So appreciate it. If we have specific questions for these individuals, then we'll get some of the others up to give us more detail. Representative Widener.
Just one quick one, Madam Chair. In the text here, it's 181 days. Does it need to be 178, or what's the conflict there?
Chair Cowan, Representative Widener. Yes, that was in collaboration with the ODVA, making sure that it got down to 178 days. Our original HJR 7 was 181 days because that's the federal regulation, but... based on the needs of the ODVA and the needs of our National Guards, guardsmen, men and women, we needed to get it down to 178 days. And that's what HJR 3...
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, and they'll give you the specifics, but one of the problems that the National Guard and reservists, I was a reservist, not National Guard, you see, is that the feds, federal government, they game the system, and they will put you on active duty for 179 days, because if they do 180 days, then your benefit levels change. And so you'll get orders for 179 days just so they don't have to give you benefits. That has happened for decades. And so this is, we can't change the feds, but we can help at the state level. And you know, if we have systems, you know, we gaming is happens everywhere, but this is a place where we shouldn't be gaming the system to disadvantage soldiers. And so that's why that the 181-79 does become very important.
Thank you, and we'll get additional detail from some of the staff folks that have been working on putting this verbiage together. Thank you very much for opening this. I would also like to draw attention to that we do have a letter submitted from Mr. Robert Bushman, who was not able to be here today, but that is part of the record. I think we're going to get our detail here from Paula Brown and Paul Evans. And amen. I will let you go in what order you see fit and help us to understand all of these details.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Paula Brown. I'm the Deputy Director at the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I have submitted some written testimony, but I'll just try to hit the high points of that so that I'm not reading it to you. I'm here today to support HJR 7 and the Dash 3 Amendment. The amendment... it amends the Oregon Constitution to make the state Oregon Veterans Home Loan a lifetime benefit and also expands the eligibility to veterans using the Oregon Revised Statute 408.225. Currently, the Constitution, as you've heard previously, restricts the state veterans home loan benefit to a veteran from 30 years of date of discharge. What we find is that veterans... Vietnam veteran Mr. Bushman is a perfect example that you've got Vietnam veterans who have been out for 30 years or more, and I think they're kind of shocked that that time goes by so quickly, but they come to the department ready for their home loan and only to find out that they're no longer eligible. That's certainly not something that the news that the department likes to deliver to that veteran. We want as many veterans as possible to be able to take advantage of that kind of a benefit. And then also you heard a little bit about the 210-day requirement. And the Constitution does require 210 days of active duty service. 408, the Oregon Revised Statute 408.225, does not, and it uses the 178 days. So, you know, I think it's a very good fix to go ahead and make sure that if you're saying a veteran is a veteran, that it means the same thing in the Oregon Constitution as it does in our Oregon Revised Statutes. And that's actually another something else that I'll talk about in just a second. So, as I said, we want as many veterans as possible to be eligible for that benefit. The two key points of HJR 7 and the Dash 3 Amendment is, first, that it eliminates that 30-year restriction, and second, that it makes it a lifetime, making it a lifetime benefit, and then second, that it takes care of making sure that the definition matches 408.225 in statute. And I think I can skip the next part. I mean, obviously, we want all veterans to get to realize the American dream, and we don't like to turn any of them away. The federal tax code also limits the eligibility time frame for a veteran to 25 years after discharge. And the governor's task force and the department are working with our congressional delegation to take care of that issue as well. And this committee will see Senate Joint Memorial 1, which will urge Congress to amend the federal law to implement the lifetime state home loan benefit. And so... we need to take care of two pieces. We see this as kind of the first piece that we need to take care of, but we're working both issues at the same time so that when it comes together, we'll have that lifetime state benefit for Oregon veterans. There are only five states that offer a state veterans home loan benefit, and those are Texas, California, Wisconsin, Alaska, and Oregon. And we are always in very close communication with all of those states that have those programs, and it's a five-state effort. We're all working together to get that taken care of on the federal level. Now, all of this being said, now I'll make it a little complicated, although I wish I didn't have to. But I think, you know, when you're talking about a potential change to the Oregon Constitution, it's a very thoughtful process that you should engage and cover all of your bases. And that's what I'm going to attempt to do now. The Dash 3 Amendment could actually be developed just a little bit further. None of us want to see a veteran fall through the cracks, and there is a potential crack that we could address if it's this committee's pleasure. And that being clearly addressing disabled veterans receiving a VA disability rating or a non-service-connected pension are veterans. We're actually working to do that in with Senate Bill 96 to revise 408.225. So as we look at HJR 7 now, the language will match what's currently in 408.225. A dash 4 would be to make sure that it matches how we're trying to change 408.225. And the reason we're trying to do that with 408.225 is to make sure that we've got those disabled veterans who may have, for example, a 0% service-connected disability rating. We want to make sure that we're not applying this so closely that we've got those individuals falling through the cracks. So we've actually got some language that we've worked on that through Senate Bill 96, so that we could actually use that for a Dash 4 amendment if it was this committee's pleasure. Again, you know, we're certainly not taking it lightly that there's any suggestion. We're very grateful to Representative Holvey for his efforts, and we're happy to try and do whatever we can to further the effort to make sure that we are, as a public policy, making sure that the benefits that Oregon is offering are truly being offered to the veterans to which it's intended to be offered. And I think with that, if you have any questions, I would be happy to answer any of those.
I guess I got to my questions when you got to that last part.
Okay.
So I think maybe the questions are mine mostly for purposes of how we manage this information, and if others want to join in. Senate Bill 96 has been passed through the Senate and will be on our agenda next Tuesday, March 3rd. And if I understood that last description, perhaps we should hear that before we take action on this one in order to see whether you want further amendments to kind of refine HJR 7 as well. I'll let you folks answer that in the course of your presentation, if you would, please.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Mann. I'm the Public Information Manager for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and I helped draft some of this latest legislation and was working with legislative counsel on the Dash 3. There are actually, in your Dash 3 amendment, four ways you become a veteran that is eligible for the home loan program, the Dash 3s as you see them. One, you serve more than 178 days on active duty. Two, you serve less than 178 days on active duty and are discharged due to a service-connected disability. Three, you serve one day in combat. Four, you receive a combat or campaign ribbon. Any one of those four ways in the Dash 3s, you become a veteran. That is consistent with ORS 408-225. However, and this is where it gets complicated, for disabled veterans, you can be released, honorably discharged, without being disabled, and later get your disability and become a disabled veteran, and you would not qualify. So there's this little gap that we're trying to fix. We're going to fix it in Senate Bill 96 if it's the pleasure of the committee to help us out. And when we saw the dash 3, we were kind of surprised because council had told us what they were going to do in the dash 3 was write in 408.225 as the eligibility. And I asked them, I said, are you sure you want to put a statute number in Constitution? Because, you know, statute numbers change. They said, oh, yeah, that'll work. So when the dash 3 came out and they didn't have the statute number in, I said, aha, I was right, you can't do that. But it complicated the amendment a little bit because it did not take care of what we're going to take care of later. So that's why this is a little complicated and why we still have a little bit further to go in the dash 3, because we don't want to leave out those service-connected disabled veterans who get their rating after being honorably discharged from the service. And that can be 30 years after they are discharged from the service for some of our Vietnam guys. So that is why this is a little bit more complicated than at first blush.
Representative Kahn?
I just have to make the statement. I am so glad some of us are getting old. These opportunities to still buy a house.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Well, I mean,
I'm trying to understand that particular question.
It's not a question. It's just that, some of us lived through the Vietnam era and the war and with a spouse that served, and it's like, okay, will you still be eligible for a loan even though I'm getting old?
I do appreciate your comment. I actually was thinking when you said 30 years go by rather quickly, there are members of this committee who would certainly agree with that and probably can empathize with the needs here. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two things. First of all, I disagree. I don't like getting old. But
I don't mind.
But the question is, and I think I know the answer, but I want to make sure. There's no difference in a veteran who has lived in Oregon their whole life or one who moved here 10 years ago. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Riley, correct.
Thank you.
That's really the key, is a veteran is a veteran is a veteran. That's the department's perspective and position.
Representative Esquivel, and then we'll
yes,
get
and
to Paul.
I'm glad you added that in, because that is a interesting scenario, because I believe I was out of the service 28 years before I realized that I was a product of Agent Orange for a disability. Mm-hmm. I believe it was just about exactly 28 years, and come to think of it, it's been 39 years since I was in Vietnam. So mm-hmm. I'm glad that you're doing that. The other thing that I would like to ask is, on the ODVA, it used to be that it was a one-time basis only. Mm-hmm. Is that still current? Or with people that move, that have to move, or is it like federal where you have an ongoing upping of the benefits similar to your federal VA, which is an ongoing benefit, which I think we should.
Okay.
And I'm glad you got the gap on the difference, because when I was eligible for an ODVA loan, Korean War veterans were not, and I couldn't believe it, but it was true.
Madam Chair, Representative Esquivel, that's a very good question. And there's sometimes confusion about that. We do allow two state veterans home loans. Now, the exceptions to that might be that, and I think Director Willis has spoken to before some other committees about this, and he's actually one of the individuals who this applied to, is because the person is relocated because of a job transfer or something like that, they can have their home loan eligibility reinstated. So they actually could go beyond even the two home loans. Now, the way the two home loans works is, for example, the maximum home loan amount currently is $417,000, much, much more than it was many years ago when some folks got that. Well, if we take a look at that and say they got one home loan whenever their home cost maybe $100,000, they still have $317,000 of state veterans home loan eligibility left. So that's kind of how that the part works with how much they would have left and how they'd be able to get those additional home loans. Does that answer your question?
So it's similar to the federal VA, whereas if you use $100,000 out of, you'd have $317 left, and that's similar to being an ongoing benefit from that part, minus what your first loan was.
That is correct.
Correct?
Yes.
Chair Cowan, members of the committee, I just want to emphasize two points, not into the weeds of the specifics, but rather why this is an important issue for the task force. Most issues have actually already been raised earlier, but Representative Maurer said it, I think, best. We are in a situation where the last 3 to 4 decades of veterans have had a very diverse experience. And unfortunately, a lot of the laws that were written had the war veterans' perspective. And soldiers don't get to pick their wars. I mean, that's just the way it is. You raise your hand, you step forward, you serve, and sometimes there's hot wars and sometimes there's cold wars. But sacrifice and time away from family and doing things that sometimes you wish you didn't have to do is part of service throughout. And that's one of the reasons why we're trying to simplify the definitions in Senate Bill 96 and trying to make sure that that's mirrored in House Joint Resolution 7. We know we don't get that many shots at the Constitution to do it right, and we're very, very pleased to work with Representative Matthews, Representative Holvey, Representative Maurer on trying to get this one right the first time. So we are asking a little bit more indulgence on trying to make sure we get this Dash 4 amendment right. We thought it was right with number 3. We're going to get it right with number 4. But again, the point and the reason that it's important is this is one of the measures, one of the recommendations that is for all veterans of all wars to say, look, you served, you did your part, you should be entitled to take part in this program. And as a side note, this is one of the most important, one of the most successful programs Oregon does. And you may already know this, but the way that it's structured, ODVA never sells the note. They keep the loan. They work with the veteran. So if hard times come, we work with the veteran to make sure that they can pay their bills. And as a result, I think it's a less than 1% foreclosure rate, which is amazing when you compare that across the country. So it's not only the right thing, it's also a good thing. And again, thank you for the opportunity.
Madam Chair, I make one more point. As my deputy testified, there's a two-prong approach to this. We have to fix it in the state, and we also have to fix the federal piece for the IRS tax code. Let's assume the federal piece doesn't go through. This is still a really good piece of legislation for the Constitution because by changing the definition of veteran the way we are, it will open up even broader those people within that 30-year limit who will qualify, who currently are not qualified. So HJR 7 as amended will do two things. It will get rid of the 30-year rule in the state, but even if the feds don't do that automatically for us, it changes the definition of eligibility of veteran, which will throw a broader net for veterans eligible for this program. So it does do some good things.
Just a clarifying question, anybody can answer this, and it's the process. Once we pass this legislation, then this would most likely be eligible for the November ballot?
Yeah, whatever.
Madam Chair, Representative Comp, it's depends when it comes out, and I believe HR 7, the original bill, says the next general election.
Yeah, I read that.
And so it would be kind of the pleasure of the committee, to depending if you wanted to get it out and through the legislature quickly enough, you could do a May. Obviously, May ballot measures are more fun because there's less of them. But we'll see how the process goes, I suppose.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think that we also need to note that there is a relatively small fiscal impact attached to this bill. First of all, for clarification, because I didn't hear it mentioned, the Veterans Home Loan Program is self-funded. There is no impact on the general fund for any of the loan activity, but because this will be referred out, there is some cost with regard to the elections, estimated at $38,031 for voters' pamphlet and for it with some revenues from the election division. But the point that Legislative Fiscal makes is that it's assumed that this will be the Secretary of State will seek a general fund appropriation when the actual costs of the voters' pamphlet are known, which is partially dependent on how many measures there are and how things are divided up. So that is also a factor in determining a date in terms of what's the most cost-effective way to go, which is why I tried to roll that in now, and I probably just didn't do a real good job with it. But I think it's a recognition that we have to have there. If there aren't any other questions, it sounds to me like we need to take up Senate Bill 96 at our next meeting, and then you will develop an appropriate set of amendment, a dash four amendment to bring back to us to figure out how this needs to be worded. And that, it's probably dependent on that, how quickly it will move. Any other questions on this one? Okay. We'll close the hearing on House Joint Resolution 7 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2571.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2571 requires all Oregon universities and colleges to charge in-state tuition for veterans who have received an honorable discharge.
Thank you.
Establishes that a veteran who receives the new GI Bill will be charged tuition and fees equal to the new GI Bill benefits received.
Thank you. We have a few folks who would like to testify. I'm going to open this with Paul Evans to give us an idea of what we're talking about here, if we could, please. Then we'll move into broader testimony.
Chair Cowan, members of the committee, thank you again for the opportunity to be here. My name, for the record, is Paul Evans. I'm the policy advisor to Governor Kulongoski for Military Emergency Management and Veterans Issues. This also is a recommendation that comes out of the governor's task force, but it's actually a bill that is being championed by Representative Edwards and Representative Matthews. It has to do with making sure that veterans that want to take advantage of the new GI Bill and other educational opportunities, veterans that have decided to make their home in Oregon, have the opportunity to claim in-state residency while they're doing so. This is something that across the United States is being considered. Ohio, for example, has passed legislation that says that if you are a veteran, you're automatically a resident of Ohio. What we've tried to do, quite frankly, because of the budget situation that we're in, is have our cake and eat it too, unapologetically so. What we've tried to do is basically make sure that all the different funds that are currently out there to assist veterans, having to do with the Yellow Ribbon Coalition and the Voc Rehab and other programs that are currently in place, that if a veteran is trying to access a university system or community colleges in Oregon, they're not technically a resident, we're going to use all those federal funds, or at least availability of federal funds, first to try to buy the price down, and then at that point they'll have in-state residency and pay the, especially with the new GI Bill, what they can in tuition and fees and all the assorted costs. In terms of raw numbers, this probably won't affect a whole lot of people. It will affect enough people that there is a small fiscal. We've worked very hard in collaboration with the Oregon University System to whittle those numbers down. We believe that the agreement that we've come up to, that will be explained in detail a bit later, is exactly the right approach. It ensures that we utilize the available funds that are out there first before we tap into precious few funds for education. But it also sends a clear signal to the veterans community across the country, and especially our veterans at home, that we're not going to let a small little process problem get in the way of you taking advantage of your educational opportunities. And that really is the most important piece. This, in concert with what we believe, and we've talked about in this before, the Campus Veteran Service Officer Program. We believe that with the VSOs on the campuses working in tandem with the other programs and improvements, that we're actually going to help make opportunities more available for veterans and hopefully bring more dollars into the campus communities as a result. So this is a partnership. It's a bill that we very strongly support. And to prove that there's a real partnership, Oregon University System is up here at the same time. And I just, again, want to say thank you to everybody that's been working on this program. It really has been a collaborative approach.
Thank you. Excuse me one moment. Representative Edwards, I'm sorry I didn't see you earlier. Would you like them to finish their presentation before you come up?
I'll follow right after them.
Thank you. I just didn't see you earlier. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joe Holliday. I am an assistant vice chancellor with the Oregon University System. And as Paul says, we're up here together because we're working together to amend this bill so that we can support it. We do support it with amendments. Our concern after we did our fiscal analysis was that we'd be asking the universities to forego about $3.6 million in revenue in the next biennium as the bill is currently drafted, and working on the wording and on the amendment to make sure, as Paul says, that the federal benefits are used first before we ask the universities to forego that part of their non-resident tuition revenue. We believe we can solve that issue. Our other issues are, again, we will work out. There are issues about whether distance education and other self-support programs would be covered. We'd like to see those removed from the bill. Self-support programs are just that. They need to generate a certain amount of revenue to meet their costs. We also would like to see how vocational rehabilitation benefits as part of the federal benefits would be used, again, before a state benefit is used. So, again, we do support it. We'll work together. We had a meeting this morning to get that process started.
Thank you. Are amendments pending then at this point?
Chair Cowan, we are working with Legislative Council on amendments right now because of the volume of amendments.
Right.
We're trying to pick and choose when we go and bring the chocolate, I understand, is what we're doing. Trying to help ease it in.
After we get all of the bills that are pending, I think we'll be able to work through amendments in a timely manner. I just wanted to understand where it was in the process. Are there specific questions for these individuals?
Just a point of clarification. I brought 3.5 pounds of chocolate in yesterday, so you should be able to catch some of that out, Paul.
Thank you. If you wouldn't mind, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Madam
Chair.
Sorry,
I was still thinking.
Don't recognize
paying it forward, huh?
Yeah.
Paying it forward, yeah. Dark chocolate.
I just want to say that, for you, Mr. Holliday, and of course, I'm sorry, she was part of the meeting as well. Is that Ms. Pinheiro? Is that right?
Yes, Lisa Pinheiro.
Yes, yes. I just want to say that at no time did I ever feel we were so far apart that we weren't going to start working together. And I think it says a great thing about the institutions that you're representing. And also to the veterans out there, I think that they're very comfortable with knowing that we're going to come out of this with a program that we can all live with and that moves forward and protects the interests of everybody involved. And so I appreciate your commitment to this. I'm sure that Representative Edwards is going to comment on that as well. But Paul Evans, great work, and everybody involved. Just thanks very much for keeping the mission in mind and coming out with some collaborative effort here. It's just great. Thank you.
Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. You stated it would be a loss of $3.6 million to the universities. Is that current veterans that are attending our universities and higher ed system that is out of state currently?
Exactly, yes. Madam Chair and Representative Esquivel, our fiscal analysis is crude because of some unknown factors, but the $3.6 million represents the number of non-resident veterans currently in our 7 Oregon University System institutions who would thus be eligible for this benefit. And the unknown is the veterans who perhaps we don't know about who are attending the universities right now, and the non-resident veterans who would actually come to Oregon to take advantage of the benefit. So those are the unknowns.
Well, but I mean,
follow up.
But that to me is a moot point, because if they aren't here now, you aren't getting anything anyway. So I don't even think that should be entered into it. But the fact that we do have that many people here is very interesting to me, that we have that many veterans here.
170.
Yeah. Excellent.
170,
I think you said.
170. Chair Cowan, members of the committee.
Yes, ma'am.
And I'll have it up. One of the things that is kind of a changing dynamic, which we believe is kind of the magic asterisk here, is the Yellow Ribbon Coalition program, in that it is a voluntary program, but the universities have all committed to that program, which actually provides money and halves the costs. So There's a number of programs we're trying to take advantage of. Those will be reflected in the amendments. We believe we can buy down the $3.6 million to far less than that. And at the end of the day, when we factor in that the campus veteran service officers will be helping get more people involved and engaged in entitlements that they've earned, that actually the money will actually bring money into the campus community. So we do have an agreement on the table that we think is tolerable. So again, thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Lisa Panera with the University System, and I just wanted to follow up with the question from Representative Esquivel on the fiscal impact statement. Representative Esquivel, what we had done is we did determine that we do have 170 non-resident veterans attending our institutions today. We don't know who, as Mr. Holliday said, we do not know those who have not self-identified as veterans. So we just did the math based on the highest tuition rate within the system, which happens to be at the University of Oregon, which the GI Bill would pay. And we just calculated that based on the number of non-resident veterans we have. We came up with a loss of potential revenue if we were to not charge them the non-resident rates of about $12,000 per.
$12,000, because you take, excuse me, Madam Chair.
Representative Esquivel.
Because $3.6 million divided by 170 is about $21,000 apiece.
And that's for the biennium. That's for 2 years.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So it would be $11,000, $10,500 apiece. Okay. But we charge that much more?
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative Esquivel, yes, we do.
Okay. Well, it's encouraging to hear that we're all going to get together and figure this out. I don't think it's anyone's goal to take any revenue from the system. It is our goal to bring more people to the system. And I believe we can reach that with everyone working together. I think perhaps Representative Chris Edwards would like to speak to that a bit. Thank you for bringing us this bill, along with your cohort here, Representative Matthews, who has deferred to you to speak for the both of you.
Okay. Well, you should never do that.
But he's still close by.
I'm happy to speak for myself, Madam Chair, committee members, Chris Edwards, State Representative in House District 14. That's West Eugene, Santa Clara, and Junction City. And I come to you today in support of this veterans tuition bill. As I've been thinking this past interim, legislative interim, and watching what's happening in Iraq and Afghanistan, and anticipating what's the future for our veterans when they come back from those missions, I've been concerned that they're treated with the honor and the respect that, and the gratitude that they deserve when they come home. And it's from that concern that I was especially interested in what the task force was doing in the interim and had the opportunity to spend some time with them in going around Eugene Springfield area on a tour of, we did some town halls and meetings with local leaders and meetings with some service providers, and it was eye-opening, and I especially enjoyed the town hall where we got to hear from veterans about their concerns and what they'd like to see the state do. And it was after one of those town halls that Jason Alves, who is in the audience and will be testifying here in a bit, came up to me afterward and shared with me some stories and about situations of folks who return home to the state of Oregon, where they consider home, but because they've been stationed out of state, we're having to pay out-of-state tuition. Now, we have rules currently that govern who gets in-state and who gets out-of-state and how long you have to be here and how long you have to work, and I think that there's certainly some opportunity to improve upon those rules from my perspective, but that was the beginning of a larger conversation. And so in working with him, working with Paul Effens and members of the task force, we've come up with a bill that you have before you today. I'm very, very thankful and appreciative to OUS and Paul Effens and folks in the governor's office to working toward a solution that will work for the university system, that will work for the veterans and work for the taxpayers of Oregon. It doesn't matter, in my opinion, it doesn't really matter what you think about the mission that our president sets or that Congress authorizes for our armed forces. when they return home, they deserve the respect and gratitude for their willingness to give the ultimate sacrifice for our country. So this bill is just one chance of many to say thank you and welcome home, and help out where we can as a state. And so I appreciate this committee very much for taking it under consideration. I urge your support for the bill.
Thank you very much. Any questions, Representative?
If you don't mind.
Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Edwards, I just want to say thanks again for allowing me to be part of this with you. You know, as part of the, as we walked many miles together during the interim, I guess you'll call it, this was a topic of discussion. You know, it's very much a passion of my life and very many others as well. And I just appreciate the opportunity to be on this with you and to help this along. And thanks very much for responding to the needs of the veterans and their families.
Oh, and thank you for your support.
Thank you. If we could now hear from Jason Alves and Danielle Pinnell. Am I close? I'm sorry. And Brian, would you like to come up at the same time? Certainly. I'll let you choose the order. I just look at names on the list here.
Okay. I guess I'll go first. Well, thanks for having us. My name is Jason Alves. I'm the director of the Veterans and Family Student Association at the University of Oregon. I was honorably discharged from the Navy in 2005, where I came to Oregon. I'm going to back up a little bit. Before I joined the service, I lived with my mother up in Washington. My father lived down in Lakeview, Oregon here, and I came and visited him every summer and stuff like that. And then I joined the service out of Washington. So my home of record while I was in the service was Washington. I had every intention of when I got out coming to Oregon and going to school in Oregon and living in Oregon. When I separated service, I came to Lane County and went to Lane Community College for 2 years before I transferred to the University of Oregon. Lane Community College has reciprocity, so any state that touches the touches Oregon State gets in-state tuition at Lane Community College. So I lived in the state of Oregon for 2 years, paid taxes in the state of Oregon for 2 years, paid rent in the state of Oregon for 2 years on the GI Bill, and then transferred to the University of Oregon, where I was required to go to school for a year worth of time at 8 credits or less. No matter if you're at half credit or full time, the GI Bill still counts against your 36 months that are total. So the year that I did half time at the University of Oregon subsequently has added on an extra 2 years, about a year and a half of school that I'm going to go to. That year and a half, 2 years of school is not going to be under the GI Bill. That's going to be transferred over to student loans, which the GI Bill was intended when I first went on it, because my family did not have enough money to put me through school, was intended to give me the opportunity to go to school without having to worry about student loans and have to worry about going that route. When I transferred to the University of Oregon, I was working full-time and taking half-time credits, and if it had not been for family members that lived in the Eugene-Springfield area, probably would not have been able to go to school or, you know, pay rent and eat and all that kind of good stuff. So, as the director of the Veterans and Family Student Association, I mean, I'm in the trenches, as you will. A lot of veterans that are coming back, they're having trouble reintegrating, they're trying to go to school, they're trying to juggle different jobs, different hats, a lot of different things while they're still trying to get their education and stuff like that. I have a lot of veterans that I don't think would be able to come to the university and go through the out-of-state tuition process if they did not have support from our group or from family members in the area. The reason that I do support this bill, and I like the way the bill is, I really, really like this bill, is there are a lot of veterans that I may not see at the university level because they do not have the support in the area, that they go to transfer to the community college, and because of the constraints of half-time, let me step back. If you go half-time on the current GI Bill, the Montgomery GI Bill, you get paid half. You get paid half. So as it is right now, with my GI Bill, it's about $2,000 a month that I get to go full-time. $2,000 a month is enough to pay tuition and live off of a little bit and kind of be all right, cushiony. $900 is what you get for half-time. Half-time paying out-of-state tuition at $900 a month and still expected to pay rent and eat and stuff like that is not enough money. So the constraint there is where my family came in and where my veterans group that came in and helped me out too was that they were able to help out and pay for a few of the bills, help out with tuition and stuff like that. So I guess my big problem with not having this bill go through is that there's a lot of veterans that may not get to the secondary level, to the OUS system from the community college level, because they don't have the necessary, you know, support from family and members and stuff like that, that they have to go through that year's worth of half credit at only $900 a month. And that still is failing against their GI Bill. So, and then the new GI Bill is great, but it's still only going to pay highest in-state tuition. So even those veterans that are transferring are still going to have to pay out-of-state tuition with an in-state tuition. I know that I'm not 100% versed on the Yellow Ribbon program, so I can't really speak to that, but I know that's supposed to fix some of those problems. But thank you very much for listening.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Let's listen to the full panel here and then we'll see. Go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Committee. My name is Brian Longoria. I was an active duty Marine for 4 years and a resident of California. I moved here with my family in about September of 2006, primarily to go to the University of Oregon. I was actually kind of a big Ducks fan while I was down in California. And so I got out of the service, moved here with my family, and then luckily had the intelligence to call over to the university and get the residency information before I came out. And then I learned that I had to go to school part-time for a year. And while I was doing so, I was fortunate enough to be able to live with my family at the time. But, I'm not sure. I know that currently the GI Bill is about $1,300 a month. And that before that, during halftime, was approximately $800. And the difference between that was approximately $500, which was, at the time, my car loan payment that I purchased while I was in the service. And so without the aid of my family and being able to live at their house free of rent, I was also working part-time when I wasn't at school at a restaurant, and I don't believe that I personally would have made it through part of my first year of college without their assistance.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Danielle?
Good afternoon. I just want to start out by thanking all the members up here who have served with the armed forces or have family or loved ones. We appreciate it. My name is Danielle Panel. I'm a student at Mount Hood Community College, and I'm also the wife of an Operation Iraqi Freedom wounded veteran. On June 13, 2004, my husband was injured in a grenade ambush in downtown Baghdad, resulting in the loss of his legs. Today, he suffers from hearing loss, shrapnel wounds, PTSD, as well as the loss of his leg. So every day, he fights the war here on Oregon soil, even though he's not in battle. My husband and I recently relocated to Oregon from Arkansas after visiting here and falling in love with the state. But we moved here and were forced to postpone our education due to the current law of establishing residency. So now that we waited and waited and waited, we are both now attending Mount Hood Community College. And when this bill came across, the Oregon Student Association, they asked me to testify just to kind of share a little bit of my heart and my passion for soldiers. And with the upcoming deployment of 3,000-plus soldiers in Oregon, whose deployment will last between 6 and 18 months, most of them will be forfeiting their residencies. And the weeks and months closely following their return is usually the hardest for most servicemen and women, as they're having to readjust themselves in a day-to-day life and then add to their stress of forcing them to pay tuition that's 3 times higher than in-state tuition. Our veterans have already fought for our freedom, and why should we make them fight for an affordable education now? It's so important to get our servicemen and women back into their everyday life and educated so that they can continue to grow and to just be a part of the social aspects of life and everything. And so I'm just here to ask you to support the House Bill 2571 on behalf of our men and women who have, are, and will serve in our country. I feel this is our duty for them, for all that they've done for us.
Any questions? Representative Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not a question, but I just want to thank you for coming here and speaking to us. There are 3 veterans on the committee, and we appreciate you and your families, and thank you for coming.
Thanks.
Representative Matthews.
I just, during the testimony, I'm kind of looking at you, Jason, and just you seem like you're going through a lot of emotion. I'm just going to ask you a question. I hate to put you on the spot, but after taking this as far as you have and going through this, now you're here today to testify. Thinking about the magnitude of what this means for Oregon's veterans, how are you feeling today?
I'm very proud to be an Oregonian, first off. The process has been really amazing to run into Representative Edwards and bring up something that really was dear to me. And my position now as director of the Veterans and Family Student Association, like I said, I'm in the trenches, so to speak. I get a lot of veterans down in my office that are, like I said, they're juggling many different jobs and different hats and stuff like that as they try to go through school. and anything that helps them out, anything that makes that process easier after what they've already done. This is amazing. If we can get this in any aspect, I think it's amazing that it would help them out. Does that answer your question, Representative Matthews?
Follow up.
And I think, and I want to say thanks for your service, but also I don't think there's anybody on this panel, I don't want to speak for everybody, that wouldn't want to push this through, but I think that this is coming through this process because it's a collaborative effort, and there's a lot of folks, including the OES, that's working hard on this. So I think in the end we're going to hopefully have something we can get through with, and I just appreciate your effort, and thanks for everything you're doing for the veterans. Being a veteran yourself, that speaks volumes of you. Thank you.
I too appreciate you being here. Some of us who aren't veterans might also be a parent of a veteran, so we'll just throw that in too.
Yeah.
I have one question that I need some clarification from whomever feels comfortable. The comment about during the length of the deployment forfeiting residency, and my understanding was that you kept your residency in the state from which you were deployed, so I just wanted to see if I misunderstood that.
That's something you spoke to.
Yeah, that was my understanding. I could be wrong, but
when
they are relocated through the armed forces is what the bill said, that they, the information that I got, that...
I know that...
Yeah, because they have forfeited their residency and have had to relocate it as a result of armed forces, that they're forced to pay out-of-state tuition. Because I think, and I'm being new here, but as far as I was told, you had to maintain residency for at least 6 months.
Okay.
We can
have somebody who has the rules come back and address that a little bit. But I want to make sure we have a clear understanding. That's not any lack of support for the bill. It's just that I want to make sure we get that clarified.
I'm not 100% sure if it's exactly what she's talking about, but I know that I have members in my group that because they served time in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, or in Florida and stuff like that, that they ended up changing their residency to those states, even though they intended on coming back to Oregon, because they, by lack of knowledge, they didn't know they'd have to have in-state residency, but they were all living in those states, and they're paying rent in those states, owned a car in those states, and stuff like that. And by not having a base in the state of Oregon, really kind of...
Understood.
Well,
I saw three people waving hands out behind you in the audience, so I'm sure someone will step up here and address that in just a moment. So thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, whoever the volunteer is that would like to answer that question can leap up here, and then we'll get to Greg Warnock.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Joe Holliday again. One of my roles with the Oregon University System is to chair the Interinstitutional Residency Committee, the IRC. So I can only speak on behalf of the university system because the community colleges have their own rules and their own appeal processes. So I'm only speaking for the OUS here. The residency rules in Oregon do require for the university system that a student who relocates to Oregon establish residency in a 12-month period generally, and that studying for taking 8 credits or less is generally advisable. If a student is taking more than 8 credits in any term during that 12-month period after which they've moved here, they are presumed to have come here primarily to be college students. And the residency rules exist basically to preserve the right of Oregonians to pay resident rates for tuition. So when people relocate to Oregon to study, if their primary reason for relocating was to be a college student, the residency rules as currently written say you are a non-resident, but that you can establish residency over a 12-month period by following certain rules.
And those rules involve the 8 credits, that means you need to take more or less than 8?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, to establish residency, students must come here initially for a primary purpose other than to be a college student.
Right.
And taking 8 credits or more in the rules as they currently exist is, creates a presumption that they did in fact come here primarily to be a student, therefore they are a non-resident. So one of the ways to become a resident is to take 8 credits or fewer, but also to demonstrate that you were here primarily for some other purpose, whether it was employment, whether it was that you relocated with a spouse, that you lived with a non-custodial parent, and so on and so forth.
Okay, thank you. I understand that as far as the university residency requirements. I think we probably need to still get to the part about military deployment and where your residency is. Representative Comp?
This is a little different, but while the Vice Chancellor's up here, and maybe because I'm a money person, and so I'm looking at costs, and I pulled up the tuition rates for the university system, and some universities have quite a deviation or increase in costs for resident versus non-resident, and others don't. Could you give me the background on that?
Madam Chair, Representative Comp, and members of the committee, most of the universities, and I don't have those in front of me, but six of the seven universities have a non-resident rate that is generally three times the resident rate. And Eastern Oregon University is the exception because they do not charge non-resident tuition rates. They charge only resident tuition.
In your current book, it doesn't show that. It shows
OIT, Eastern Oregon University, and Southern Oregon University, almost little to no change, whereas the Oregon State, Portland State, Western Oregon University, and University of Oregon, a tremendous difference.
Representative Esquivel, members of the committee, I'm not sure what you're looking at, but what we have and what we could certainly provide to you would show you that all the six universities, with the exception of Eastern Oregon University, has a substantially higher non-resident rate for full-time students. Very often that kicks in at the ninth credit. One to eight credits very often is treated differently, but at the ninth credit and for full-time students, again, with only the exception of Eastern Oregon University, it is about three times the resident rate.
If you could get that information to the committee, I think it would be helpful to answer some questions.
Chair Cowan, members of the committee, I'm Karen Smith from the Oregon Community College Association, and I just wanted to clarify that our community colleges have a much shorter residency requirement, 90 days to establish residency for a community college. So it's not as big of an issue as it is for attending an OUS institution.
Thank you. That's helpful to clarify the difference in terms of attendance. And I think I'm going to also invite Paul Evans up because I think he can address one of the other questions. But go ahead, Representative.
No, I had a quick question, I'm sorry, for the community colleges. Is the credit still the same? Is it eight or less credits with the community college as well?
I don't think I'll have to get back to you on that, but I don't believe we have a limitation or a restriction that involves credit hours.
Just follow up? It seems like that's just really a very interesting, if that's the lever that puts somebody into residency or non-residency, it seems like a real critical piece that folks would want to know. I think Mr. Longoria was able to get that information first, so he didn't make a mistake that some might, but that'd be interesting to know if community colleges were the same.
Well, let me check on that, and I'll get back to you.
Or we could pass this legislation, and it wouldn't be as important.
Let's do that instead. Thank you.
Mr. Evans.
Chair Cowan, members of the committee, I kind of had to go try to negotiate something, and I apologize.
Do you want me to clarify the question?
Well, yes. About residency and about losing residency when you're on active duty, I want to address that one.
I just want to make sure that everyone understands clearly an individual, whether they lose Oregon residency if they're deployed during deployment, if they're deployed from Oregon.
They shouldn't ever lose residency as long as their home of record is in Oregon.
Unless while they're deployed they would choose to designate their residency and if they're stationed in a different state.
Perhaps. If they choose to do that, yes, but that happens very rarely because of, first of all, with the National Guard and Reserve folks, that I don't think ever happens because they know they're coming back. When you go on active duty, in fact, I lived in Florida for 4 years and I was still, home of record was Oregon because that's where, well, this is my home. So we're going to try to track down the particular issue that was mentioned earlier, but as a general rule, it is very, very uncommon for anybody to change their home of record just during a deployment. During a 4-year or a 6-year hitch somewhere else, maybe, but not during a deployment.
Thank you. Representative Riley.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. Actually, during a 4-year deployment or longer, it's quite common for someone to change their home of record to a low tax state. Mm-hmm. And there are states which have no tax for members of the armed services, and it's quite common for members to change their home of record to those states.
Chair Cowan, members of the committee, if they're active duty, especially over 4 or 6 years,
right.
I concur. But for a 12 to 18 month mobilization, that generally is not the case.
Okay. I just thought it might be helpful if everyone understood clearly. I actually have a family member who for years maintained his Oregon residency because of licensing his vehicle. That's another subject to hear.
Chair Cowan and members of the committee, pardon me if I'm getting into too much detail here, but I can assure you that Paul is correct. If an Oregonian becomes an active duty military service member and serves somewhere else, unless they take action to change their residency, we will protect their Oregon residency. Also, if an active duty military person is stationed in Oregon who is not a resident but is stationed here or whose ship is in port here, we also consider them residents for tuition purposes. So generally, we assume as a committee, I'm talking about the IRC here, that you can only be a resident of one state. Okay. And that is the essence of what our work is. Where is this student a resident?
Thank you. I appreciate the clarification. And again, if we can move this bill forward, then we won't have to have any confusing, complicating rules. Thank you very much. Greg Warnock would also like to testify. Is there anyone else who wanted to testify on this bill today? That's all I have on the list. Okay. If you could sign up over here with this young lady, we'll get you up next.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Greg Warnock, Oregon War Veterans Association. I'll make my testimony very brief. We definitely support the thrust of this legislation. We do, however, want to be a little cautious in when we hear comments that, yes, we support the military, we support all the activities of our service members and value them when they come back home, but we don't know how to pay for those services, and no one wants to pay for those services. Everybody looks for another way to pay for those services. That's red flags for us. So when we watch for the amendments, what we want to look for is make sure that additional bureaucracies aren't created for the service members, that they don't have to fill out lots of extra paperwork, that they don't have to jump through lots of different hoops to get the benefit. And also when there are struggles about who's going to pay for this, the feds, certain parts of the federal government, other parts of the federal government, certain parts of the state government, the colleges, universities, no one wants to pay for the benefits, and we understand that. There's very little money available, but we hope that the legislation's passed and that this benefit passes on to vets who attend college. Just for the record, I was in the military in between GI bills and didn't get a GI bill and didn't have educational benefits and paid for college through work and loans and so on. And so there are lots of groups of people that would like to qualify and are looking for money to go to school, and there are a lot of challenges to try to find money to go to school. And these guys back here mentioned that. Fortunately, there are organizations starting up at the college level that are trying to advise and counsel vets as they come back to school on how to access benefits. But I can assure you, accessing benefits today for college education is very difficult. And I think this bill could perhaps help that a little bit. So we support it. We are interested in seeing how the final amendments come through, though, and want to be careful about that. There are other things happening too, and you'll get some legislation hopefully to your committee in the near future. We have a bill, for example, LC 3219, kind of goes along with some of the testimony that was mentioned here today by other witnesses, that we would like the colleges and universities to report how many veterans are actually enrolled in their schools. Right now, nobody knows that, and that's something that we'll be talking about in the future. But
you can address the concepts generally, but this is a public hearing specifically on this bill and not announced for anything else.
I appreciate that. Thank you. So what I'm saying is that there are other concepts coming in that will help support this general idea of helping vets access benefits that will help them become better educated in Oregon. And so we appreciate your time today. Thank you very much. If there's any questions, happy to answer. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you. Do we have additional folks who'd like to testify? We'll get them added on. So those of you who would like, why don't you come on up? And
ladies and gentlemen of the committee, first off, I would just like to say thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak up. My original intent for being here today was just to listen in and see how the system worked and get some experience, as I am a senator for ASPSU at Portland State University.
Could you give your name?
Yes, my name is P.V. Jantz. First off, I would just like to point out that I would have served if I was able to, but since I am deaf, I was not allowed to serve in any branch of the military. With that said, I feel the need to speak up and point out the fact that there's a generation shift going on now where a lot of students my age and younger are turning more and more to the military for educational funding and assistance. A perfect example of that is my younger brother, who was killed in the Air Force about 4 years ago. And his whole intent for serving the country, first and foremost, was for the honor of serving the country. And secondly, was for the educational benefit that he was going to be able to receive from the military and the experience that it's. So I just wanted to point out to you guys that as more and more people turn to the military for educational experience, it is being viewed more as an assistance to a system that has a crack, and that crack is growing larger by each and every year, and tuition gets more expensive, and the middle class shrinks. So by effectively showing support for this bill and fixing some of the issues that this bill had, you guys are actually helping not only residents of Oregon, but any person who serves in the veteran and anyone who actually has something to contribute to the state of Oregon by moving to this state. Benefiting from the educational system, they are able to reinvest back into the system by paying income taxes and having a job here in the state. So I just felt the need to be able to point that out and just show you guys that that is what's going on now, and I really appreciate your willingness to look at these issues and try to address these issues. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Is there anyone else who would like to speak to this bill? Okay, well then with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2571 and we'll await the amendment for more discussion. Thank you all for coming. Anything else for the good of the committee today? With that, I will close the Committee on Veterans and Emergency Services. Thank you.